Dale, I'm glad you didn't give a reason for collecting those dues the same as they gave down at Kellogg Voorhees a year or two ago. I remember attending one of the meetings, and Bob Proxel was then the secretary treasurer, and they asked him what they used the dues for. He said about the only thing he could think of was to give going away parties for the faculty and staff members that were leaving. I'm glad that isn't true here. It isn't true down there either. I'm wondering why he started a half hour ahead of time. I assure you, I'm not going to give a speech that's a half hour extra time. I always like, however, the opportunity to talk to the ladies as well as the gentlemen of our Cal Poly family. I am expecting the usual visit to the SP train. I think over the last 28 years, and any important occasion like this, I've never missed one. Maybe that's the reason he started a half hour early tonight. I also want to remind you people how pleased I am to have occasions of this kind, the kind that you're going to ranch breakfast on Wednesday morning, and all the other activities you have throughout the year. To bring our group closer and closer together as a family, I think it's just wonderful that we can have the opportunities of meeting of this kind and to get acquainted and to keep together and to know one another just as we've done over these many years. I'm very pleased about it because as we get larger, it's going to be more difficult. But the only way to overcome our size is to plan programs of this kind, although it's a little difficult on the speaker after eating such large meal and of the steak that you prepared tonight, and I want to congratulate and thank Jack Bertram for the fine meal that he prepared. In our business, people are important. Did you ever stop to think that there are very few professions or occupations that deal more directly with people than those of us who are employed by a state college? Most other occupations deal with services and material things. I can remember one of our staff members down at the other campus a few years ago. I had a little difficulty with him in understanding that we deal with people and not with material things. He couldn't get over the fact that in our administrative organization that he had to have things done immediately. He was thinking in terms of unloading freight cars and shipping them or shipping freight cars from here to New York, and he thought that all he had to do was give orders and get things done in that way. But we're dealing with people. We are primarily responsible for the education, training, and development of those who come to us as students. Whether we are here as instructors, administrators, clerical workers, or custodians, our basic purpose is the same. We are here to work with people and to assist in the improvement of people so they will be better able to take their places as citizens in our great state. Therefore, people are important to us. What kinds of people are important to Cal Poly? One of our greatest advantages has been the fact that all kinds of people have been important to this institution. We are a democratic institution. That has been one of our greatest successes, and that has been one of our greatest traditional prides. We have been democratic, starting with ourselves. We have always invited to all of our functions representatives from all divisions of the college, to the president's reception, staff meetings, the college council, council of administrative personnel, the executive councils. All divisions of the college have representation. We recognize all teachers for what they are as teachers, whether they have a PhD, a Doctor of Education, an MA degree, a BS degree, or no degree at all. We recognize them indiscriminately so long as they are good teachers with a proper amount of educational background to do a good job in keeping with our Cal Poly philosophy. Our tradition refuses to build the importance of any single teaching field at the expense of another. And we have not limited our general campus organizations to merely the actual instructional faculty, as they do in most other schools. To us, every person contributing to the welfare of Cal Poly's program is as important as any other, and as necessary as any other, and we regard their families in the same way. We have been democratic with our students. Cal Poly has always recognized that a successful democracy can flourish only where all parts of that democracy have equal opportunities fitted to their needs. Our very being calls for us to work unceasingly toward that end. We know there are human differences, differences in abilities, differences in ambitions and desires, but you and I are here today because the causes of democracy are not served well if all students are shaken up in one big barrel of academic conformity and poured out to run where they may. This is especially true because of that big barrel of academic conformity to which so many institutions of higher learning subscribe, originated in the classic Greek idea of education for the leisure class and was re-emphasized in the gentleman's school of classic England. They still give their major allegiances to that conception of what is and what is not education. We have been democratic with our students because we believe in a close student-teacher relationship in which all can share, not only during undergraduate days, but through all the years to come after graduation. And we are democratic with our students because we have insisted on open opportunity to participate in any activity for which they are naturally qualified. At Cal Poly, we see no place for snobbery of any kind. We do not believe in artificial prejudgment. And this is the one of the basic reasons why we have not been willing to recognize as campus organizations the restrictive Greek letter social fraternities. In addition to ourselves, Cal Poly all through the years has been democratic with the people of this state. We know and willingly recognize that the California taxpayer is a corporate shareholder in our institution. When visitors come to a Cal Poly campus, we want them to quickly sense the difference between our college and what unfortunately is too frequent atmosphere as some of the other colleges. We have worked hard at this developing of spirit of appreciative and outgoing friendliness. Up to this point, at least, we have been successful. Time and again, complete strangers have written or spoken to me about it. We have been able to establish this appreciative and outgoing atmosphere because it has reflected the true underlying spirit of our institution. We have built a reputation of being democratic with the people of our state because we have held as a sincere respect for the dignity of labor. We admire and hold high regard for the person engaged in research and the most learned professions, but we insist that in this democracy of ours, and especially in our complicated modern era, the man of discovery is helpless without the man of application. And we have found that the man of application in these days supplies many of the ideas and problems which the man of discovery is able to establish and continue his progress. So in talking with you here tonight, I want to stress the importance of people to all of us here at Cal Poly. First, because we must never forget that all of our teaching programs and all of our facilities were established and are maintained by a state which up to now has agreed with our philosophies and methods. Second, because the support we have obtained thus far is only a preliminary to what we must develop even better during this critical period of California's educational affairs which now lie directly before us. We now come to the importance of 1960-61. I say these things to you because of certain developments. Since the close of World War II, as we all know, California has been undergoing a growth so tremendous that none of us have been able to keep up with it. Our governmental structure has lagged farther and farther behind. In most cases, this could not have been avoided. People have poured in and demanded services before they could be properly taxed to support these services. In Los Angeles and four adjoining counties, today's population and governmental expenditures exceeds that of 43 of our nation's respective states. And there seems to be no foreseeable end to it. Our Kellogg Voorhees campus is almost in the exact center of what the social economists call a huge metropolis. By the year 2000, Just 40 years from now, they see an unbroken city extending along the coast and into the mountains all the way from San Diego to Santa Barbara and perhaps as far as Lompoc and Vandenberg. We are caught in that squeeze between needs and financing. One of the governmental areas that has been hardest hit by this incoming tide has been education. As a part of education, the state college system has grown larger and larger until this year it was removed from the State Board of Education's administration. Instead, we are now to be administered by a state college board of trustees. The new board is in the process of choosing a chancellor, its executive office for all the state colleges. I've already reviewed for you on several occasions the history of the master plan that prompted the state legislature to revise the whole structure of higher education in the state. And I might say that last week I attended the State Board of Education meeting at San Mateo and also the board meeting of the new trustees in San Jose on Friday. This is their second meeting. Their first meeting, an organization meeting, was held on the 12th of August in Sacramento with the governor as chairman. Last Friday, they met in San Jose at the San Jose State College. And at that time, they appointed an acting executive director, a Mr. Don Leifer, who will act in that capacity until they find a permanent chancellor or president, I don't know what they'll call him, to guide us as state colleges in the future. I might say that this board, of course, is the basis of it was the State Board of Education. They have 10 or 7 more members that were appointed by the governor, and then some of them are ex officio members. We're very, very fortunate in the appointments that have been made. 5 of the members have had sons at one time or another attending Cal Poly. One of the members is a son of one of the outstanding board members back in 1930s and 40s who helped us get and was responsible for getting Cal Poly the permission to grant a bachelor's degree. We have another member who practically lives on Alvorez campus down at down near San Dimas. In fact, when he was introduced the other day, the chairman, Mr. Heilbrun, said that he was representing the California State Polytechnic College because he lived on the Vorey's campus at San Dimas. So we're very fortunate in having a board of that kind. I was very much concerned as to the appointments on the board. We have, of course, our friends who are now the Speaker of the Assembly, who's also been a very good friend of ours for all these years. The Lieutenant Governor has always been a very good friend of ours. He's on the board, and of course, the Governor, we're making him a friend gradually. He spent most of the day on our Kellogg and Vorey's campuses last Wednesday. So we're doing all right in that direction. And the new acting member who was appointed last Friday to act as the executive director was a professor at the San Diego State College and for the past year has been in the governor's office in Sacramento. And he knows Cal Poly's program, and we're working very diligently with him already. On the 13th and 14th of October, this board is meeting at our Kellogg unit. And I promised to put out the red carpet, give them a free barbecue, a horse show, and a few other things, and they all accept it very graciously. Now, during this coming year, we will find the board and its chancellor getting established. Remember now, Cal Poly is the only one of the state colleges that is really different. All of the others cling pretty much to a general pattern. Just how well and how successfully we're allowed to fit into this new operational structure is going to depend primarily on one thing, just how well and how successfully we can continue to justify our Cal Poly program to those who are now responsible to the state for what we're doing. Along with the new board and its chancellor, we are faced with the increasing and tremendous pressures toward state college conformity. The board and its chancellor no doubt will press toward conformity as a simplification of supervision and as an instrument for financing, if nothing else. I might say in that connection, the state director of finance set for the state colleges at an amount of $75 million. For all the 15 state colleges for 1961-62. The request from the colleges was over $80 million. They thought they could pare it down after several committees got together, the business managers, and they pared it down to about $78 million, leaving about $3 million difference between what the Department of Finance has stated that they would allow and what they had to have to exist. For example, if Chico State doesn't get some of this additional money at the end of this next year, this current year, they will have to drop 10 of their staff members. We're in good shape. I want to say that. We're in very fine shape whether we get any more money or not on both campuses. But I want to state that Monday I was appointed by Dr. Simpson as one of a member of three presidents to work with the new board on the budget. And that's where I didn't say much. I was told not to talk for Cal Poly or as a member of this committee, but for all the colleges, and so I didn't say much. I got someone else appointed chairman, and he was to do all the talking for the colleges. But they had the director of finance present at the meeting, and he said there will be no increase over that $75 million because the way it looks now, the governor will under no circumstances ask for any more taxes at the next session of the legislature. And if they increase it any, it's going to mean that they're going to the budget will not be balanced, and the governor doesn't want to do that, and you know why. So that's the status there, and they're up against that program that we have to watch. So I'm mentioning that here, particularly because there's going to be a supervision and financing problem that we have to be concerned about. And at the same time, almost every other one of the state colleges is pushing harder than ever toward conformity. They want conformity, and they're not going to stop wanting it. Most of the other state college presidents will deny this, but only last month, one of the state college presidents presented a proposal that all state colleges have a common series of courses to meet the general education requirement, a proposal that would force every student to meet these requirements with a single pattern, no exceptions, no choices. Outside of my strenuous objections, there was very little disagreement, and the matter was referred to the deans of instruction for further study. Various kinds of faculty groups in certain of the colleges, most of them small minorities, not only are pledged to conformity, but are working hard to achieve it. Without doubt, this is an age of conformity. Bigness always gravitates toward conformity. We see it in our supermarkets, in our tourist business, in our mass communications media. In many respects, conformity has some distinct advantages. But in the world of education, it is our belief that the types of conformity for which other colleges and faculty groups are working are a definite danger to Cal Poly. What do these others mean by conformity? They make no pretense about their meaning. They want all the colleges to have the same entrance requirements, the same type of instructional programs, the same standards of faculty and staff selection, identical ratings and pay scales. And this kind of conformity might easily lead to the same courses of study, lecture by lecture, lab by lab, and the exact same reading lists, and the exact same laboratory equipment. In reality, the people who make the greatest outcry about the submergence of the individual in modern society are in the process of themselves erecting an undergraduate sardine factory. Should we by any chance become wrapped about by the toils of the academic conformity, a college such as ours would become choked and smothered. Cal Poly would lose its identity and its real purpose for being. And you and I, all of us who believe in the worth and the exciting challenge of our work we have at least presently chosen, we along with our institution would have been stripped of our essential purpose. Let me say this to you, here at the start of this new year, if we expect to preserve Cal Poly's identity, if we expect to be able to do the job you and I came here to do with the undergraduate, we must be willing to do battle for our institutional independence. This by no means indicates any wish or suggestion that we secede from the state college system. we might be driven to such an approach eventually, but it would be a last-ditch resort. We want to work effectively with the other state colleges. They can be strength to us, if they will, just as we can be strength to them. We are a complement to the other state colleges in rounding out the system. The excellence of performance level established by our alumni is the best demonstration of the important function we fulfill. But we will not continue to fulfill these functions if we sink into the great swamp of conformity. Personally, a great deal of the excitement of dealing with Cal Poly young people and a great deal of the stimulation that comes from doing a unique job better than anyone else is willing to do it will have vanished if we have to harvest the same variety of beans as everyone else, pick them in the same field, pack them by the same formula in the same sized cans, and realize that only the difference will be that the beans will be in the label. What are some of the specific things that you and I can do to protect Cal Poly's institutional independence? First of all, as we begin this all-important year at hand, we should all of us refresh ourselves as to the purposes and objectives of this college. Last year, we published a Cal Poly profile, and it looks like this here. Now, if you have not read it and studied it, you should do so without any more waiting. If you have, I placed some copies down here for those who have mislaid theirs and forgot what it says. In the profile, we have put in a small package some definite and explicit statements of Cal Poly's basic purposes and objectives. It already has proved highly useful in our contacts with outside publics, but its greatest value should be as a ready reference for your creative thinking and action. Some of the profile's highlights that we must keep before us at all times include, of course, the basic statement covering the legislation establishing Cal Poly as outlined in the Education Code, which states specifically that we're an occupational type of institution for both sexes, and it names the types of work we're to give, agriculture, engineering, home economics, business education, and goes on, industrial arts, and anything else that will contribute to the welfare of the state of California. And then it says this law shall be liberally construed. Well, I hope that there'll be no change in that section of the code after the legislature gets underway next spring and this board gets ideas of this conformity. That's one protection we have there. Now, in implementing the law, we've included many things, as you know. We have explained in this profile the Cal Poly's upside-down plan, the emphasis on Cal Poly's learning by doing philosophy, the application of studies, investigations, and research developed by our own college or by other institutions which have value in Cal Poly's instructional programs, the selection of faculty who, besides being academically competent and pedagogically able, must also be occupationally oriented and successfully experienced in the fields of their teaching. The utilization of our faculty and staff in extension and continuing education programs to specifically identify and serve adult needs both on and off the campus. The profile describes the importance we place on citizenship training, purposefully and closely interweaving the residence campus program with our instructional areas and our co-curricular activities. The unremitting emphasis of the know-how with the know-why and the determination of Cal Poly to stake its reputation on the working success of its graduates weighed in terms of the total contribution made by these occupationally trained men and women to the welfare of our state and nation. As I told our cabinet and executive councils the other day, these are not simply pat sales terms. They are not designed simply as nice reading for visitors. They are compactly worded statements of our most basic policies. As such, they become our specific responsibilities. Not the specific responsibilities for some of us, they are the specific responsibilities for all of us, and they will remain so for each of us until one of two things happens. until, for some good reason or combination of reasons, they might be changed for all of us. Or unless some of us find that we cannot personally tolerate them and must go elsewhere in order to be more happy in our work. There is other reading and discussion in which you should engage too. Our occupational brochures, which will keep you posted on the ways by which other parts of the college are applying our basic purposes and objectives. Copies can be obtained, of course, in either in the publications office or the admissions office or the department head from where the source of the brochure. Our college handbook, a copy of which each department head can be expected to have available for your reading. There are Cal Poly's unwritten traditional understandings. You, old-timers, should reassimilate them and should make certain our newcomers become aware of them. I've touched on some of them before. The traditional understandings are such things as our close and informal friendliness, a traditional understanding that has proved not only an excellent recruiter of students and teachers, but an excellent developer of allies. Our respect for the dignity of labor is another. Our close student-teacher relationships. I can remember one of our state board members who employed some of our boys asking me why our boys are different from other students from other colleges. And I asked in what way, their attitude, their resourcefulness, their humbleness. And the only answer I could give him was the fact that we have a close student-teacher relationship here that gives that student an opportunity that no other student has. They develop and they become the image to that student of what he's going to be afterwards. And that gives us a lot of pride. Then our feeling of some responsibilities for the student after he graduates and leaves school. We have our placement officer that keeps a definite record and follows our students way beyond for years and years after he leaves here. And our alumni association that we are very much interested in helping. The considering of our problems and solutions in the light of San Luis Obispo and Kellogg comprising one single institution. Indissoluble if our philosophies and methods are to continue their statewide impact. There are other ways by which we can review our jobs and rededicate ourselves to our particular educational mission. But neither you nor I can give any telling support to our college until we have made certain within ourselves that we know what we are expected to do here at Cal Poly, that we believe in it, and that we are not only willing but eager to keep ourselves prepared to do the best possible kind of a job we know how. Occasionally I hear about or perhaps meet someone who feels that Cal Poly should abandon its basic principles and purposes and become what is called a traditional liberal arts college. The other day I had as my guest for luncheon Chancellor Gould from the University of California, Santa Barbara, formerly the president of Antioch College, a college world famous for being different. Chancellor Gould complimented Cal Poly on having singleness of purpose, a real goal. He said no educational institution ever made a reputation trying to do all things to all people. He went on to say that when interviewing candidates for teaching positions, he was very careful to tell them how Antioch differed from other colleges. He always told the potential teacher that he should decide before taking the job whether he wished to work for an institution with those objectives and methods and not attempt to change the college's objectives afterwards. But this is what I want to emphasize and reemphasize. Before we can sell anybody else on the value of Cal Poly, its objectives, assigned to us by the state's legislature, we ourselves must know what we need to do in our particular sphere. We must be enthused about it, and we must keep ourselves in a position to do it well. To help preserve our institutional independence, we must, during this year ahead, put more emphasis on securing recognition for our type of program. We can do this through more well-placed publicity, through taking the initiative and working more closely with our public relations coordinators and our news bureau. We can help through the attracting of more visitors to the campus, through the showing them what we do and what we need to do, and even better. We can help through sharing with our students and our alumni a real consciousness that a program such as ours depends for survival on proper recognition. We can help preserve our institutional independence by doing the very best possible job with housekeeping and everyday operations. And I'm not talking about the wives who are here. I'm referring to every member of our faculty and staff. Let's save the taxpayer money wherever we can. Let's get the most out of every piece of equipment we can, out of every room and every building, out of every hour of our teaching and staff work. Let's make it a point of real pride that we hold our course per student well within the average for the state college system. Your administration is helpless to do this without your willing assistance. And a different program, such as Cal Poly's, is on the spot if we don't. We can help preserve our institutional independence by showing the taxpayer the greater and greater value of our institution through our product, the student. This can be done by efficient operation capped by a type of student who consistently performs well in a contributive occupation, who is a patriotic, helpful citizen, and who otherwise is faithful to what the taxpayers of this state have a right to expect of him. Cal Poly's most effective teaching methods in this respect have often been outside the text and manual. With expert teaching, there is personal example. And one of the real magic areas of working with young people is that down through the years, and in more respects than you can imagine, your students will assume the image of you. This is particularly true and particularly rewarding because of our traditional close student-teacher relationships. We can help preserve our institutional independence by working actively in every way toward the welding together of our campuses. I have mentioned this before, but let me discuss it again for a moment. We will continually have certain students, faculty, administrators, state officials, and others try to separate our two campuses. Some of them will try knowingly with selfish purposes. Some try unknowingly. It is natural in some ways, I suppose, for people to try to separate our campuses, both administratively and otherwise. But we must keep this college as one institution. And as long as I'm president, we are going to resist anything that will tend to separate San Luis Obispo from our Kellogg-Borries campus and vice versa. One thing that would tend to separate us is the holding of intercollegiate contests in the major sports. I see no particular harm and some benefit should we engage in intramurals. But intercollegiate competition, especially in the major sports, is one of the quickest ways to divide and weaken our total Cal Poly one institution program. My more than four decades of experience with educators and legislators and lay citizens tells me that the moment Cal Poly's integral parts start separating, we will have lost the impact that has enabled us to preserve our type of program. Failure to see Cal Poly as one institution in making up our budgets, laying out our building programs, recruiting and developing personnel, and similar items is the encouragement of separation. Separation of our campuses might produce a little more local prestige for our Kellogg-Borries unit. It might simplify, in some ways, the administrative problems of us all. It might bring to either or both campuses seeming freedom that in reality is false freedom, because it would plunge us farther toward the general drabness of conformity. But any of these supposed gains would be feeble in comparison to the statewide, nationwide, to the administrative challenges, and to the real freedom to do a unique teaching job that are obtainable through a dedicated, strong, and united institution such as that to which we are presently pledged. We do not want a Cal Poly system within the state college system, and we accepted the additional two units as gifts for one purpose, and that's to make a greater Cal Poly. In conclusion, all of these things I have said tonight might be categorized under one statement. This year to come, Cal Poly needs to do a better job of public relations than it has ever done before. Some of you within sound of my voice will no doubt flinch at the term public relations. Yet you are inevitably a part of Cal Poly's public relations so long as you are a present or remembered part of us. For public relations is the developing of our institutional image, and you will form a part of that image whether you will or no. The late Carl Bayor, one of the nation's most highly regarded public relations professionals, he always took great pains and to explain the field of public relations in this way. No matter how you approach it, he said, image building is the collected attitudes and performance of every person who has any part in what you do. Because this has proved so true, a great many firms and organizations are changing the title of their public relations director to that of public direct relations coordinator. And others have discarded their public relations director altogether, placing his responsibilities in the hands of a person with an entirely unrelated title. More and more, there is the realization that public relations is more than publicity. It is a system of institutional habits. For us here at Cal Poly, a very important part of our public relations is the groundsman who adds the quality of friendly interest to our image by being helpful to visitors. The custodian who keeps things neat and in good order. The teacher who keeps the public relations director informed of special achievements on the part of his students so that he can inform the public. Important to our public relations is a person who is always prompt, who keeps his engagements, who goes out of his way to help some hard beset employer find a good employee. The real secret of developing good public relations, added Mr. Bayor, is in the attitudes of your people. Do they know and respect their jobs? Do they know and respect their organization? Do they know and respect their fellow workers? If these three elements are in evidence to all who come in contact with you, public relations will take care of itself. Another of the most successful public relations men in modern times is Ivy Lee. He was the man who transformed the public image of John D. Rockefeller into that of a kindly and generous benefactor. On one occasion, Ivy Lee said this about public relations. There are two kinds of public relations. You can't escape one, and you'd better not try to escape the other. The unavoidable type is the kind with which you gamble when you do no planning at all. You let others build your image as they see fit. The results are completely unpredictable. The control type is the kind where, with planning and carrying through, you decide what you ought to be, and then you make as sure as possible that you are what you ought to be, and that people you deal with know that you are. On another occasion, Ivy Lee came through with a shorter definition. To put it bluntly, he said, public relations is the planned and controlled groundwork that gets you what you need, when you need it, from those who have it, even though there might not be enough to go all around. Some of you, no doubt, will say this definition is nothing more than calculated selfishness. If you have ever dealt with the problem of getting money for facilities or teaching talent at the time and in the amount your organization tells you need, you will have learned some rough lessons. You learn most of all, and once and for all, that good public relations, at least for the publicly supported college such as Cal Poly, is nothing less than institutional preservation. I have mentioned these things to you for these reasons. First, we are at a critical point in our affairs where we must move aggressively toward the preservation of our institutional identity. It is far better that we anticipate such a need and start working in advance than to wait until too late. Second, during our past years, we have made an excellent reputation. We have many friends in all parts of California. A considerable majority of the new State College Board of Trustees knows and respects us for what we have been. We have a good start, but where we go from here during this period of high costs, teeming population, and pressure towards conformity will depend upon, 1, the friendships we keep, 2, the friendships we make, 3, the continued success of our product, the Cal Poly student, and 4, the evidence we present that we are conscientiously efficient with the taxpayer's dollar, and last, and how well we can and will stand united in knowing and showing what we need to do that makes us distinctively Cal Poly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President McPhee. If only it were possible to put the enthusiasm and the inspiration of the message which President McPhee has just brought to us in this document, the Cal Poly Profile, it would make this a golden document. And I'm sure that all of the staff members that are here have at one time or another received this from you, President McPhee, and they probably have cherished it so well that they've got it in their files here on campus. But I'm sure, too, that the spouses would like to read this, would like to know a little bit more about the Cal Poly Profile so that they, too, could interpret the functions of Cal Poly to their friends. And so, knowing that our staff members are afraid to come up to a podium to get this, I'm willing to carry this down and hand it to them out in the middle. So, don't be afraid to get up and come up to me and take one of these, thinking that that'll be an indication that you don't have one at home. This is that extra one. So again, thank you very much, Mr. McPhee, and I know that the staff club always welcomes the opportunity to get this information direct from you, and you can be assured that we're going to have you back on our program, one of our luncheons this year for sure. Again, thanks.